Chris Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nimmers Netter, just talking to teachers.
Okay, hello everybody and welcome to this week's episode of Nailers Natter. And this week we are discussing celebrating teachers making a difference. And we have two guests for you today. So first of all, welcome Chris.
Hello, really good to be with you. Thanks for having us, Phil.
No problem. And down the line, we're having slight technical issues, listener, but hopefully we're working our way around that. We have Gary down the line as well. Welcome, Gary.
Yeah, I hope you can hear me there, Phil. It's great to be here.
Fantastic. And I should start with a public apology because this was scheduled as I was talking off air with Chris before we came live for the beginning of term, but events got in the way. So we've managed to get together finally on a Sunday evening, Halloween, before we go back to school tomorrow. So apologies in advance for any trick-or-treat noises that you might hear in the background, doorbells ringing, that kind of thing. But what better evening? So we're going to be discussing, like I said, celebrating teachers making a difference. Before we get into that, if we can just do a gentle introduction. So you two talk in kind of the explanation of the book about your 70 plus years of experience. So tell us a little bit about your experience in education. Chris, if we can start with you.
Lovely. Okay. Yeah. Well, whenever we say that we've got a combined 70 years of experience, then of course our audiences just look at us in disbelief and think, well, I mean, they can't have, you know, they don't possibly look old enough. But it's astonishing how the years go by under the bridge. Gary and I have got very different stories. He'll tell his in just a moment. I started in the south of England. I had what I often describe as the disadvantage of a public school education. I knew that that wasn't the way that I was going to spend my life. I wanted to very much get involved with the mainstream of all the things that were buzzing in the education world. So that took me from training in London and to my first post in Staffordshire and then Leicestershire, where I spent most of my teaching career. And it's just been my experience that in the course of those 35 or so years, I've rubbed shoulders with just some amazing people, inspirational people who've given every sinew of strength to this wonderful job that we do. And I've just found myself in awe of so many different people, teachers in different disciplines, different subjects, different ages, different stages, sometimes teaching assistants as well. Absolute gold dust these people are, who make a difference to children's lives, and they've been a source of inspiration to me. But Gary, tell us your story, your side of it as well.
Well, very similar to Chris, except for the public school bit. Mine was the complete opposite. I went to a comprehensive school just outside Newcastle, and headed off to Liverpool to do my training, and then bounced around the country. So 6 years in Milton Keynes, and I got my first head of department's job in Norwich, and then the head of faculty's job in Sunderland, and then down to Leicester for a deputy headship, and then then three headships in Leicestershire. So so been around the block a little bit. I would like to point out, when we talk about 70 years plus here, that I probably only did about 2 years. Chris did the other 68.
Don't believe a word of it.
Fantastic stories, and yeah, I'm adding to that. So we're going to be pushing to 100 years, gentlemen, if we carry on with this analogy of the amount of experience in the room. So hopefully we can bring that to bear on the conversation. Now, I must just say, what an inspirational book this is, and it's a perfect read as I've been revisiting it for half term, because it's just such a joy to read, and I know it's going to be a real joy for the listener to go through some of the stories in the book. So one, in the introduction to the book, you talk about the great things that teachers do in their own classrooms, and they often go unrecognized. So was this the motivation behind the book, Celebrating Teachers?
Teacher is, I guess it's a bit like sort of working with lots of people. People are quick to point out things to you that go wrong, but not often rush to point out things that go right. And apart from maybe at the end of term or maybe when you're leaving, you might get a card from someone, or you might get a box of chocolates from one of the kids you teach, or something like that. But those sort of things as a teacher dealing with sort of problems and sort of firefighting, and it's I find that there's usually a situation where you bump into somebody after you've finished teaching them. Maybe they've grown up a little bit, or maybe it's a parent or even a grandparent. And for me, I call it a broccoli moment, because it happens to me so many times by the broccoli in Sainsbury's when I'm sort of like doing my shopping. Other supermarkets are available, by the way. But yeah, you're there selecting from the sort of the myriad of different types of broccoli available, and somebody behind you says, "Is it Mr. Tarrant?" And you turn round, and it was somebody that you used to teach, or a parent. And it happens to me all the time in unusual places like that. And then you have a chat about what you did, and if things go well, they'll tell you, you know, that they enjoyed your lessons, which I'll take any day, or they remember the trips that you took them on, or they remember particular things that you did in your lessons, or that you did in assembly, or whatever it was. But it's only when you bump into them. It's not something that happens, I think, in the daily life of the teacher, that you get those pats on the back from the people that you used to work with. And let's face it, why you go to work as a teacher is to make a difference for kids. And you just what teachers don't realize is that from the very first day that they set foot in a school and interact with a child, they start making that difference. And you'll never ever know what sort of impact you've had until somebody tells you what that impact is. And I'm not talking about results. I'm not talking about exam results or SATs or league tables or Ofsted. I'm talking about the actual spiritual, the motivational, the positive difference that you make in a child's life and how you have helped steer the course of their future. And the reason why we wanted to write this book is because it's just so important that teachers know that they make that difference from day one, and keep making it all the way through their career in every single interaction that they have. And sometimes those differences are small, and sometimes they are world-shattering for the kids that are on the receiving end of them. So we wanted to actually be able to celebrate what teachers do. And the book's not just for teachers, by the way. It's for anybody that ever set foot in a school, which is, by and large, everybody. So that's where we're coming from, Phil.
I think in terms of motivation, from my point of view, I had a totally inspirational teacher, an absolute role model. Just very briefly to tell you my story, I was sent away to boarding school when I was 8 years old, and I was very, very traumatised by this. I was hugely homesick, and it's a very sort of curious thing that we do to still really quite young children. I was 8 years old, just eight. And amongst this trauma of being in a boarding school 100 miles away from where I lived, it was a place I'd never been to before in my life, into this world arrived a young history teacher who was also new to the school then, and we formed an almost immediate bond. And not only was it a bond that was formed at school, and he really gave me my only reason for staying in that school. I mean, apart from the fact it would have been immensely difficult to escape because there was a very high fence around it. But he was a totally inspirational teacher. He taught lessons to die for. I can remember them to this day. He was a history teacher. He could do the Winston Churchill voice. I mean, when you're 8 or 9 or 10 or however old we were when we did those lessons, that was just mesmerizing. He was cool. He was funny. He was personable. He was interested in the same sort of things that I was interested in. But, you know, the thing that really made him stand out was that in today's parlance, he got me. He knew where I was at. He, as I say, was my inspiration all the way through school. He has been my role model in my own career. Time and again, when I've been faced with situations, I've thought, you know, how would that teacher have dealt with it? What would his body language would have been? What would he have said? And I've kept in touch with him. And I last saw him about 5 weeks ago. He's about to be 80 years old. And I gave him the copy of the book in which I tell the story, and I mention him, and he was very tearful, and he said, "I am so humbled that you've chosen to include me in your book." And he, in a way, he kind of said, "I had no idea that I had such an impact." And he thanked me, but really, I wanted to write the book to thank him and to thank people like him, people who just don't realize how good they are.
And that's something that's echoed in the forewords for the book, and some very high profile forewords for the book there. So you've got Sir Anthony Seldon, and you've also got Ben Bailey Smith there that have done forewords for the book. And Sir Anthony Seldon, I think I'm quoting from what he says in your book. He says, "Books like this will help to make teachers feel that their lives matter." And that's absolutely echoed, Chris and Gary, in what you were saying there around the teacher that, you know, you've presented the book to, and they didn't necessarily realize the impact that they've had all those years later. So that's really resonating through the book. But if you can just tell the listener a little bit about how the structure of the book works.
Well, when we set about sort of researching this book, Phil, we just popped it on social media and said, you know, just put a question out there. Have you had a teacher that has inspired you, a teacher that changed your life dramatically, a teacher that's made a huge difference for you? And we got all sorts of stuff back from around the world. And this book does circumnavigate the globe from, you know, the darkest parts of, sort of the jungle in Peru to Australia, Greece, and different parts of the UK. And what we've tried to do here is in every single chapter, tell the story of a particular teacher that we've selected, and we selected 19. There's no particular reason why it was 19, but other than we felt that the 19 covered everything that we could possibly say about these awesome teachers that we'd sort of come across and how they did things. So we told the story. And these are very, very uplifting stories. I mean, when we wrote this, Chris and I cried. We both cried. We laughed out loud. And we were in awe of these people and what they've done and the difference that they've made. So every single chapter has got the story, and they are all different stories. But in every single chapter as well, we've pulled out what we've called the difference. What is it? What was it that teacher actually did? It's all, you know, we've told the story that they made the difference, but what was it that made the difference? What were the strategies, the techniques, the different things that they did to make that difference for that particular young person? Then at the end of the book, we pull them all together in what we call the top 10 traits of that teacher, because every single one of these was that teacher for that child. And as you've already said, we've got some fairly sort of famous names in the foreword, but we've also got some pretty famous names who've given us stories, and also people have told us about the famous teachers as well. So there's a lot in there in terms of the structure of the book. We wanted to do that, particularly the picking out of the techniques, so that every teacher who aspires to be, and why wouldn't you aspire to be that teacher, can see what these other teachers have done. And just because we picked out 19, we're not suggesting there's only 19 super teachers in the world. There are tens of thousands of people like this, and we've come across loads of them. It's very, very handy to have all of these different traits that new and developing teachers can have a look at and think, actually, do you know what? I'll try that.
Brilliant, thank you. So in terms of that structure, let's start with the end, if we can. So you talked about the top 10 traits of that teacher. Now, I don't necessarily need you to go through all 10, but if you can pick out a few of those traits, talk about what they are and maybe how they can be developed.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll pick out the most important one, actually. Rather than sort of give you lots, I'll pick out this one, because nothing starts without this one. This is, and it might be, you know, teachers out there might be thinking, well, you're stating the obvious, But it sometimes needs the obvious stated before people really fully understand in the classroom how they can use something like this. The number one trait that we found, and we knew this anyway, as I say, is to build a positive relationship with the child or with the class. And it has to be a positive relationship that the teacher instigates. We've actually sort of had in our career teachers that say, yes, I want to have a positive relationship, but they don't do it. It's actually the teacher that has to deliberately go out of their way to create that positive relationship. And we talk about the different ways that you can actually do that. It's just so important that the teacher sees it as their business in their interactions, every single interaction with the children that they come across, whether it be in the class, in the playground, down the corridor, on the school trip, in assembly, even outside of school, that they are in the process of developing and building that positive relationship. And in order to do that, the very, very first starting point is, I actually get you because I know your name. And I don't know how many times this happened to me as a child, and I've certainly seen it in the classroom over my time as a teacher and a head teacher, where teachers didn't know the names of the kids that they were teaching. And that sends out a message to the child that, actually, I don't really care enough about you to know your name. But as soon as you know their name, that starts ticking the box. I get you. I care about you. And what else can you find out about them? What else do you know about them? And you could challenge yourself as a teacher to look down your register and think, what do I know about every single one of these children that I teach, these students, these kids? What do I know about them? And what do I know what they are into? Do I know what goes on in their family background? Do I know what life is like for them outside of this? Do I know if they support a football team or a rugby team? Do they take part in gymnastics? Have they got pets? Have they got hobbies? Just so that every time I see them, I can have a mini conversation. Just drop something in about what you know. And that, again, develops that relationship by telling them that you get them, that you care enough to know these things and just have a brief word. Not an in-depth interview, just something dropped in that says, I know enough about you to have this conversation. And you take it from there. And some kids, that relationship needs to be really, really worked on. I sort of give an example, I think, in the book where I had to go so far out of my way to develop a particular positive relationship with a particular student that maybe they ended up thinking I was stalking them, but you know, seriously, they didn't. But I was there when they got off the bus. I was there when they were getting on the bus. I knew where they were going to come walking down the corridor, so I could deliberately bump into them and give them maybe the first smile that they had on a Monday because they never got one over the weekend. I knew where they hung about with their mates at break time and dinner time, where they queued up in the lunch hall, so I could just accidentally bump into them and say something positive or drop in a mini conversation. So over a period of time, I developed that relationship with them, and they would begin to do what I want them to do in the class, and that's engage and take part in their learning.
Brilliant. Thank you for that, Gary. So let's get into some of these case studies in the book. So we're going to start with the first teacher that I've chosen, and this is Mr. Hope, which of course is a great name for any teacher. So how did he make a difference to his pupils?
It is a great name, isn't it? There were some great names there. There were two that really sort of jumped out for us. So Mr. Hope, obviously, and Basil Dumont, who he could well have been in a 1970s sitcom, but both absolutely fantastic names. Mr. Hope taught a young kid called Nigel Boyd, and Nigel Boyd had been bounced around from school to school because his dad was in the forces and basically was just treading water, and ended up in this school in Cleethorpes, his secondary school, and you know, goodness knows how many sort of primary schools he'd been to. And I think he said, you know, he lost count how many times he'd done the Romans. You know, there was no, in the 70s, obviously there was no national curriculum, so he turned up at a school and he said, nobody ever said, you know, what have you done? He would just come in, take part, and he quite often just do the same thing over and over again. So he really wasn't enjoying education and didn't think he was particularly good at anything other than sport, which was naturally sort of talented at, and ended off finding himself in Mr. Hope's maths class. And Mr. Hope just did exactly what I've just said. He instantly formed a relationship with the class and with Nigel, and but did things differently. It wasn't just about maths. Mr. Hope's class, in Mr. Hope's class, you had fun. He put on stupid voices. He read bits out of Spike Milligan books and basically made the kids laugh and have fun. So learning became fun by going to Mr. Hope's class. And very, very quickly, Nigel thought, actually, I hate maths. Oh, no, I don't now, because Mr. Hope makes maths fun. And that's what he did. He made lessons fun, and Nigel wanted to go back to back to Mr. Hope's lessons. I mean, I liken it to, you know, if you go out to a theatre and to see a theatre production, how many times would you walk out of the theatre and think, do you know what? I'd go straight back in and see that again. It's only ever happened once to me, and that was The Lion King in London. But I would have done it. It was so fantastic. I would have literally walked straight back in again. And that, if you like, is what you want your pupils to be doing when they walk out of your lessons, to want to come back, to be, if you like, mini boomerangs just flying back into the classroom. And this is what happened to Nigel. And it was the way Mr. Hope made the lessons just exciting, enjoyable, and different to anything else that Nigel ever had. And he inspired Nigel, he inspired him to go on and do A-level, he inspired him to go to university and to do maths, and Nigel went on to become a health teacher, a maths teacher and a health teacher, and I'm sorry to say everybody also went on to become an Ofsted inspector, but all inspired by Mr. Hope.
It's a great story. And of course, Ofsted inspectors, you know, I've had many Ofsted inspectors over the years, and some of them can be hugely helpful and beneficial and really care about developing schools. So, you know, let's hope that Nigel was one of those. I'm sure he is or was.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience that Nigel was one of the good guys.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you for that. That's brilliant, Gary. Okay, so let's get into the next one. So can we just talk to the listener a little bit about how the power of positive relationships that you've talked about already were embodied by Mrs. Graham, and how Mrs. Graham helped Paige become Miss King, the teacher?
Yes, I wrote this chapter, and it was a really inspiring story to write. So Paige tells her story of her primary school days, that there were all sorts of things going on at home in Paige's life that were making life pretty difficult for her, and she was quite an unhappy little girl. But coming into school, there was one thing that made her look forward to coming into school and made her enjoy her learning, and that was this teacher, Mrs. Graham. She had a wonderful nickname in school. All the kids called her Miss Sunshine because she had a sunshine smile, and she had that ability. As Paige arrived in school in the morning and walked through the door, you know, from that moment onwards, there was Miss Sunshine there at the threshold of the classroom, you know, greeting the kids as they came in, giving the young page this wonderful smile, which just beamed the message across to her that she was going to be safe, she was going to be looked after, she was going to be entertained, she was going to be helped to learn, she was going to do well. And this gave her such a feeling of security when there were all sorts of other tectonic plates in her young life that were on the move there, making life pretty difficult for her. One of the great joys in writing this book is that I was able just to step back from the immediate busyness of a teacher's life where, you know, you are constantly planning and delivering and lessons and then, you know, sort of evaluating them and all that. And I was able just to do a little bit of thinking and a little bit of reading into background research. And I discovered this concept called relational value. And it's not something I'd really come across before, even though I think I instinctively knew it. But relational value is a concept which is explored by psychologists. And it's really very simple. Basically, that in every relationship, we want to feel valued. So if we just think about our personal relationships for a moment, yes, you know, things are always better at home, aren't they, when you're feeling valued and you're feeling appreciated. And if you just take that into a classroom situation, then every single child, if the teacher is able to transmit to each and every child, and it can be so difficult to do. It's easy to talk about, but actually very difficult to do, particularly with secondary school teachers who teach so many children. How do you manage to transmit that message that as a teacher, you value that child, you rate them, you appreciate them, you think they can do well, you see the best side of them? Because once you start to get that message across, then in a sense, you can feel, you know, your sort of heart swell with pride and confidence, and all those positive endorphins get going in the brain. And that was exactly what happened with young Paige. She had so many difficulties that were going on. And yet, when she was in Miss Sunshine's class, then she had that feel-good factor, and she suddenly thought, ah, you know, despite what's going on at home, here is somebody who rates me, who values me, who thinks that I can, who believes in me. And that's actually a theme that runs through a lot of the stories in the book. You'll find it in the story about Mrs. Irwin, Mrs. Baxendale, Mr. Tweedy. Lots of these teachers, when they were nominated for the book, then people said of them, that was the teacher who made me believe that I could. That was the teacher that made me believe that I was important. The lovely thing about the Paige story is that she grew up in quite a challenging and a deprived neighbourhood, but she was so inspired by her teacher at primary school that Paige decided that she herself would like to follow in her footsteps. And she found her way back, having trained and qualified and all of that, back to the same school. And she, in turn, became the Miss Sunshine for a whole new generation of teachers. And I suppose new generation of children. And I suppose there is a slight theme there in the book. There are quite a few people who have been so inspired by their teachers. I suppose I'm one. They were so inspired by their teachers that they wanted to go on and become a teacher themselves. And certainly that's a feature of Paige's story there. So it's a great feel-good story. And as I say, because it does full circle to the point where she sort of steps into the shoes of Miss Sunshine and becomes Miss Sunshine herself. It's a really good story to tell. And it was, I felt very privileged actually to have Paige share that with us.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chris. And I mean, in terms of the book, you know, and just to remind the listeners, so the book we're talking about is Celebrating Teachers Making a Difference. And, you know, we obviously, you know, you see a lot of discourse over holiday periods with, you know, perhaps people finding the job quite challenging, which is understandable. You know, we live in challenging and difficult times. However, you know, taking yourself away sometimes from the timeline of your social media and towards a book like this, and I'm sure that the listener will agree, you know, we're already feeling even more motivated than maybe we were already about our next venture into school. So it's like I said, it's a really joyful book, but it's also an engaging and an inspirational book, isn't it, in terms of, you know, you talk about how the teachers can make the students believe that they can go and achieve anything. But when you read this book, you remind yourself of those kind of qualities that maybe you possess and how you can make a difference for those young people in front of you. So it's a really, really important book, I would say, particularly at this moment in time. So
I think, teachers, that they have such a busy life. It's full on, isn't it? It's absolutely full on for long hours in the course of the day and all the rest of it. And sometimes, the challenges seem somehow almost overwhelming, that it's just sometimes difficult to just remind yourself, just take that step back, look at yourself from the outside and remind yourself, we all look back on the day and we're all very good at thinking about the things that didn't go quite as we wanted them to go. But there will be so many exchanges that we have in the course of a day where, we have just done that crucial trick of making people believe, making people feel good about themselves. And we have so many opportunities. And so often you just don't realize how you've touched a child's life. Gary's talked about broccoli moments. In my case, it was a doorbell moment. I was upstairs actually writing the book. Doorbell went, and we live in a fairly new estate. And there was a builder standing at the door there. And we've had builders coming in and out all the time, to come and sort of fix any sort of problems there were with the house, because it was a new build house. And this guy just stood there and he didn't say anything at all. And I that look after a bit, you think, oh, I wonder if I taught this guy. So anyway, after a period of silence, he said, hello, Mr. Henley, do you remember me? Well, of course, I hadn't the faintest idea who he was. But, we got there. He gave me a nudge and then we reminisced about the good times. And then memory started to come back. I did vaguely sort of remember who he was. But he then went on to say, very kindly, he said, I loved your lesson. And I thought, well, that's great. But he said, do you know the thing, really? And I said, no, I have no idea what he was going to say next. Then he said, I remember you because in year 8, when I was going through a really tough time, you were the teacher that stood by me. Now, I've got no recollection of that, Phil, and we will all do this day after day after day. Every child matters, don't they, to us as teachers. And what we're doing is just, what it is our job and our calling to do, which is to do our very best for every single child. But it's easy not to to recognise and not to remember what an impact we do have on children. And it does us all good to be reminded sometimes. So hopefully that's part of the book as well for teachers just enable every single teacher to take a step back and just remind themselves of what a fantastic job they do and what a difference they make to people's lives.
Absolutely. And in terms of that difference, the next teacher that we've chosen really went on to make a huge difference to Mandy's life. So how important is that kind of engagement and getting students interested in your lessons and your subject? How important is that in inspiring, and in this case, Mandy, who I believe went on to become a teacher and an author as well?
She did indeed. Mandy looks back on her own school days and she sort of thinks she was nothing special in terms of, her academic success. She was just sort of pottering along. She was part of quite what she rather charmingly describes as quite a lively class. I think we probably all taught those in our time, haven't we? They were just sort of meandering their way through school. But there was one teacher who really stood out for her, and that was her English teacher, and she had an ability of teaching lessons that were somehow quite different to what all the other teachers that, the kids were going through in the course of the day. Gary and I often talk about boomerang lessons. These are the lessons that you want to come back to because, boomerangs come back, don't they? So, when you teach a lesson that's so good that the kids are sort of, almost tugging your sleeve and saying, when are we going to do that again? And certainly Mrs. Malcolm had that sort of knack. I mean, Mandy remembered that there was a sort of textbook that was quite commonly in use at the time called Smudge and Chew Pen, and it was a sort of a series of incredibly repetitive sort of grammar-based exercises, absolutely dull as ditch water. But Mrs. Malcolm didn't use that approach at all, and she would use stories to inspire them, and she had a very, very lively way of teaching that the kids really enjoyed. They loved her lessons. But the really interesting thing about this story was that it was actually the quality of feedback that Mrs. Malcolm gave to Mandy that really sort of did the trick, if you like. And again, we're back to this relational value bit. She was the first teacher who really made Mandy believe. Mandy, as I say, was just kind of coasting along, thinking that she was nothing special. But she wrote a story, and when she had it marked and it was given back, Mrs. Malcolm had written some really encouraging, good feedback on it, praising Mandy for the effort that she'd put into writing the story and picking out certain things about it that she particularly enjoyed and that she said in terms of her writing technique were particularly effective and had really made the story stand out and, you know, hang together and all of that. And as I say, it was a real turning point for young Mandy, the first time that somebody had really made her believe that she could do it. And it started a whole process in which, first of all, Mandy started doing very well in English. That actually knocked on to other subjects in school as well. So, the school sort of took on a new look, if you like. And it took Mandy on through, actually, she didn't go straight into teaching. She had various other jobs first, but then she came into teaching. She was a highly effective teacher herself and then started writing novels, and she's a published author as well. So, I think probably Mrs. Malcolm at the time, when she was doing her marking, like we all do, and wrote those comments on Mandy's work, she would have had no idea of the impact that those comments were going to have on young Mandy's life and, the difference that she made. We come back to that theme again. Great teachers and all of us, we just don't realise always what an impact we have and what a wonderful opportunity and what a privilege that is to be able to play that role in a young person's life.
It absolutely is. And obviously you mentioned, or Gary mentioned earlier on, about the 19 teachers that we've talked about here. So I thought I'd give you two as the authors an opportunity now to choose maybe a couple more of the stories that you would like to share with the listeners. So are there any of those that you'd like to go through now?
I could go through them all, actually, Phil. I sort of juggled with this because there's some famous names in here. I could pick out Mike Bushell of Breakfast TV fame, his teacher, Mrs. Irwin, who totally changed his career path by inspiring him to get involved in drama. Or I could talk about the teacher, Paul Harvey, who was nominated by Alex Lewer and Dominic Gling, both kids that he taught, now very successful adults. Paul Harvey of fame again on Breakfast TV, oddly enough, of the Four Notes piano composition. But I'm actually going to pick Nick Butter as the young child and Mrs. Baxendale as his teacher. Nick, when he went to school, student reception, was just chronically shy, so shy that he would not speak. He wouldn't engage with his peers, he wouldn't engage with adults, and he was dyslexic as well. So everything was stacked up and he just felt that he was completely useless. But it was Mrs. Baxendale that made the difference. And Mrs. Baxendale worked him out, got him, and literally held his hand and designed strategies to get him to be able to step out of himself and to engage with his peers, to take part in events that he couldn't possibly do because of his chronic shyness. And she actually held his hand when he did the Egg and Spoon race at school, just to actually to get him out there. And she was his reception teacher, but she stuck by him all the way through his primary school and all the way through his secondary school by providing extra support, extra help outside the classroom of an evening, of weekends, really, really going that extra mile. And, from this incredibly shy lad, Nick has become an incredibly successful athlete. As I speak now, Nick will have run over 1,000 marathons in his lifetime. Now, just sort of take a pause and sort of soak that in, because Nick's in his 30s. So he's run over 1,000 marathons. As I was interviewing Nick, I spoke to him while he was running from the top of Italy to the bottom of Italy, and he was running around Naples, around Mount Vesuvius. So I was interviewing him while he was running a marathon, and he was not at all huffing or puffing like the majority of us would be. Nick has run the world. He's the first person to have run a marathon in every single country of the world in sequence. So that's absolutely phenomenal. And some of the, you know, so he's done it in he's done a marathon in North Korea. He's done a marathon in Iran. He's done a marathon in tiny little island nations in the middle of the Pacific. What he's done in the last year is he's run the whole of the perimeter of mainland Britain. So he's run all around Britain. That's 200 marathons in 100 days. And in all of these events, he stops and he speaks to people. He goes into schools and he delivers motivational addresses to kids to try to pay back what his teacher, Mrs. Baxendale, did. And he also makes a living by sort of speaking to audiences to talk about the books that he's written. If you want to read a really interesting book, read Running the World by Nick Butter. It's a super uplifting book. You don't have to learn about the world as well. But this is how Mrs. Baxendale changed his life. She just literally held his hand and nurtured him out of this cocoon of quiet to take him to a place where he developed confidence and the ability to interact with other kids. Changed his life immeasurably.
Absolutely.
My story is it's similar to that in some ways, except I'm going to choose Isla, who nominated Mr. Richardson for the book. Isla is not a famous person, hasn't done anything, nothing even remotely to compare with Nick Butter. But Mr. Richardson played such a huge role in her life, just a very ordinary student in a very ordinary school, but with a quite extraordinary form tutor. So Isla was having all sorts of difficulties in school. Friendship groups weren't really working out. She was constantly being late into school because of the friendship groups. She didn't want to be in the playground when the people who were and bullying her and giving her a hard time were around. She was having trouble getting homework done. So all sorts of problems that were going on. And we will all have met many, many youngsters over the years who will have been through similar sort of difficulties there. We'll all have scratched our heads as to how best we can help. But Mr. Richardson was always there. First of all, in terms of Isla not being on time to school, the school policy was quite clear about this, that there were detentions to be set and punishments and penalties and all of that. But Mr. Richardson took a different view, and he would have Isla into his room at break time or lunchtime, and they would talk about where it had gone wrong that morning, why she hadn't been able to come in on time. And he also started creating an opportunity, a window for her to do her homework in a safe environment, in school, where she'd be comfortable. She says, he even used to put the kettle on and make me a brew. So he started to be the person who, as we've mentioned before, was able to look deep into her soul and say, I rate you. I value you. I know things aren't working out for you at the moment, but I'm going to be there for you, and we're going to work through this together. Now, in a way, that on its own would have, I'm sure, enabled Isla to have nominated Mr. Richardson for the book, but it went beyond that. Isla, very unfortunately, when she was in year 11, was diagnosed with a life-threatening illness. She therefore missed about two-thirds of that final year in school, and then, the year 11s moved on. And you might well think, well, Mr. Richardson will have thought, well, job done. Those year 11s, that cohort have moved on from the school, and, there's no need for me to keep in touch. far from it throughout the many, many hospital visits that Isla went through and very intensive treatment. Mr. Richardson was there for her all the way. He was the conduit of messages from other teachers and other friends that Isla had by this stage managed to make in school. He was the one who kept in touch with the family. He would just give them a quick ring and say, you know, don't want to keep you, but just wanted to know that I'm thinking about Isla and I hope you're all well. And, you know, we want to send our best wishes and all of that. When Isla came out of hospital, Mr. Richardson went round to see her, took, again, messages round and organised a tea party. He was just amazing. And the family just didn't know where to start in trying to say thank you to him. And when I mentioned that we were writing this book, then they all just instantly looked at each other and said, I think we know how we can thank Mr. Richardson now. We want to nominate him for the book. We want to tell his story. And we'd like to share just what an impact he's had, not just on Isla, but on our whole family. What a privilege we have as teachers to make a difference.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, in terms of both of those stories, you can see the impact that those teachers are having. And it's interesting that Gary chose Mrs. Baxendale, because not like we'd planned this podcast, gentlemen, but you know, that was the one that I had open here. And you know, you can see that the line that sticks with me here is that Mrs. Baxendale's legacy is leaping a generation and helping to create the difference Nick is making to this world. And Nick now still stays in touch with Mrs. Baxendale. He still enjoys the company. It's now a friend who changed his life. It's just such powerful stuff. It really is. Okay, then. Right. So if we just get into the last couple of questions, if that's okay, Gary and Chris. So just a quote from Ben Bailey-Smith in the foreword. He says, positive engagement of our young people should be the number one focus of any nation. So how do we encourage the next generation of teachers to be the focus of the next edition of Celebrating Teachers?
Well, as Gary's mentioned, you know, we chose 19, that we could easily have had two lots of 19 or three lots of 19. There were so many stories out there. This is one of those things that whenever you get a conversation going with people, you very, very quickly get into stories of teachers who make a difference. So what I would like to do through this book is just to shift the mindset of teachers in this respect. We mentioned already the sheer busyness of the job, and sometimes with a fairly unrelentingly hostile coverage in the media of teachers and what they do and so on, sometimes it's very easy for heads to drop. What I would like to do is to just remind teachers of the incredible job that they do. They change lives and they make a difference to young people. And do you know the thing about making a difference? Once you've made a difference to a young person's life, you will never unmake that difference. You will be that teacher to that young person for the rest of time, for as long as they shall be. And it's often said of teachers that we don't know the impact that we have. Well, this book has been an opportunity just to remind teachers of that impact, the special difference that they make. It's easy with the sheer busyness and the challenge of what we do to lose sight of that focus. But I would like to, from the bottom of my heart, thank each and every teacher and teaching assistant, every person who works in a school, because there's a huge operation that goes on here. Every person who works in a school is a role model for young people. You make a difference to young people. You change lives for the better. And from the bottom of my heart, I want to say thank you to you. And this book is about celebrating that incredible role that teachers make.
Fantastic. Okay, then. So just to finish off, Chris and Gary, if I might. So obviously you work on a daily basis in schools, with schools, you know, primary schools, secondary schools, universities, all across the sector. So if people who are listening to this now want to pick up the book, obviously we can signpost that in a minute. But if they want to work more closely with you two, is there any way you can put the listener in touch with you here? So is there anything we can follow on social media, any way they can get in touch with you? And then just what kind of things you're working with schools on?
Well, yeah, social media indeed is the easiest way to link with us. So Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, easiest way probably is as I do the bulk of this is to look my name up in all of those different formats. Can get in touch with me via email at gary@decisive-element.co.uk. We've got a website, Decisive Element website. What we do is by and large, we work with schools, as you say, universities, training establishments, teachers' unions, and we don't go along as experts. We're not experts. We've just learned an awful lot over the time that we've been in school. And what we want to do is just share what we know. And we do work. We run workshops. We run workshops where we'll pass on that expertise that we've picked up from other people. So we're passing it on and saying, you might like to try this. This might be great for you in your classroom or in your school. We work with NQTs, we work with trainees, we work with middle leaders. But I also do free visits to schools because I'm also a fiction author. So I've got a couple of novels out there. One of them is called The Magpie. It's set in World War One, and I go into schools and talk about how I wrote it, and talk about how I researched it, talk about story, and just try to inspire kids to read more and to take writing more seriously. And I do that for free in schools. And as it ticks all the boxes for Key Stage 3 History and Key Stage 3 English, the book, I also take in a whole load of World War One artifacts as well, and have a bit of fun with the kids. So, if anybody wants that, I'm more than happy to go in and do that as well. And that's a freebie, obviously. For the teacher training stuff, we charge. But people can get in touch with us through social media or through that email address.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Gary. Right. A huge thank you, Chris. A huge thank you, Gary, for coming on Nailers Natter today. Just a reminder that the book, Celebrating Teachers, Making a Difference, is a Crown House book. So is that available in all the usual outlets there, Chris?
Yes, it is. Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. So, sorry, Gary.
This is our sixth book as well, by the way, Phil. So we've got a whole series of the Art of Being a Brilliant Teacher series, and we have another book out called Decisive Element, all of which have either been shortlisted or won awards. So they're all doing pretty well across the piece.
Fantastic. So we'll put links to all of that on the show notes as well. So it remains to say thank you, Chris. Thank you, Gary. Really appreciate it. And for everybody who's been listening, go and get the book. And like Gary said there, go and look at the back catalogue as well. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
Very much.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.